The House will come to order. Flag salute will be led this morning by Representative Harker. That would be Barker.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremonies will be presented by Pastor Lee Wigan, First Baptist Church of Canby, a guest of Representative Kennemer. Pastor?
Let's pray together. Father God, we thank you that you are God and we are not. And Father, I thank you for these men and women that have been chosen and are willing to serve our great state and help our state to make laws. And we just pray today that they would be very, very wise, that they would make wise decisions. And Father, we know that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so we pray that you would impart wisdom upon them. And Father, we know that you tell us that when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. And when wicked people rule, the people groan. And so we pray that they would be very wise, be very righteous, that they would make wise decisions today. And we will rejoice in that. Once again, Father, I thank you for each and every one of them. I thank you for the work that they do and the sacrifices that they and their families make to be here and to serve in this capacity. You bless them greatly today. We pray in your Son's most precious name. And all God's people said, amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Courtesies. Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to, again, ask that courtesies of the House be extended to Pastor Wigan, who is my guest today. He is the pastor at Canby First Baptist Church. And today, also would like courtesies extended up in the South Balcony, our students, from the Canby First Baptist Church School, and also the South Clackamas Christian School out in Yoder. I hope you all know where Yoder is. Welcome, please.
Welcome to the Capitol. And for our educational moment in history, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Women's History Month, the Sisters of Holy Names and Sisters of Providence. In the 1859, a group of Catholic nuns from Canada braved the difficult journey to Oregon to provide medical and educational services in the state. Their leader, Marie Rose de Rocher, helped form the Sisters of the Holy Names, and almost immediately the sisters established a boarding school and academy in Portland using many books, music, and art supplies they brought with them for teaching materials. The school named St. Mary's Academy is the oldest continuously run school in the state of Oregon. In 1858, the Sisters of Providence built the first permanent hospital in the Northwest in Vancouver, which moved to Portland in 1875 when the St. Vincent de Paul Society donated land. To support the St. Vincent's Hospital, the sisters went on a rural begging tours, traveling the state on horseback, collecting donations. They were successful, and St. Vincent's became one of the two major teaching hospitals in Portland during the 19th century. The sisters read medical books, attended lectures by local doctors, prepared their own medications, and organized a school for nurses in 1892. As city population rapidly expanded, the sisters raised still more money to acquire larger tracts near Westover Road, and by 1895 had moved to the larger facility. Both orders are vital presence in Oregon's communities and continue their commitment to health and education of its residents.
Further courtesies. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please extend courtesies to four honorary pages today from Estacada. I have four guys, and they all are interested in some colorful professions. We stand when I call your name. Nick Benedelli. Nick is in the seventh grade at Estacada Junior High, and he plays four different sports, and someday he wants to be on the bomb squad. Bryce Babikoff. Bryce is also in the seventh grade at Estacada, and also involved in tag. And in career goals, he wanted to be a lawyer, but he crossed that out and put in engineer, which is clearly a step in the right direction. Jordan Rowland is in the eighth grade at Estacada Junior High. He plays football and baseball, and including he plays right tackle in football, and someday he wants to be a cop. And Nolan Odie, I think I got that right, in the eighth grade at Estacada, is into wrestling and cross country, and someday he wants to be a UFC fighter. Nice job, Nolan. Colleagues, please welcome them.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, would like to welcome two honorary pages. First, Luke Youngberg. Luke, would you stand? Luke, as you already heard, is from the Estacada Junior High group, enjoys sports, reading, and he, too, is a tag student. Glad you're here, Luke. And Jacob Davidson. We have two Jacobs, but this is Jacob Davidson. Eighth grade. He likes sports and Wii. And by the way, Jacob, I excel in the Wii sports. And he's also in the tag program. Glad you're here.
Representative Van Orman.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to recognize pages today from my district as well. I would like to recognize Brandon Beck, who is not here today because he's sick. Alexander Barstad is from Estacada. He's in Estacada Junior High. He's in the seventh grade, and he's in sports, and he plays the French horn. Thank you, Alexander. Emma Oles. Emma is from Estacada in Estacada Junior High, and she likes sports, and she's on the student council. Thank you, Emma. Brooklyn Schultz. Brooklyn lives in Eagle Creek, is at Estacada Junior High, and likes Lego, robotics, and science. Thank you, Brooklyn. Jake Crombie is from Estacada, going to Estacada Junior High, and he likes math. So nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for your service to the House, and welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please extend a warm welcome to my interim this session, Jessica LeBrun. Jessica lives in Tualatin. She is a veteran of the Air Force, and she is currently enrolled in George Fox College, where she is studying social and behavioral science and will graduate in December. Please extend a warm welcome. Thank you.
Welcome. Representative Gelzer.
Thank you, colleagues. Please join me in welcoming some fine students from Corvallis. Up in the back gallery, we have fourth and fifth graders from Lincoln Elementary School, and there are 75 of them here today, and I hope that you all enjoy your visit to our state capitol. Welcome to your Oregon house.
Welcome to the capitol. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm just hoping you'd extend courtesies to a couple of constituents who are here today from Charbonneau, Jim and Kathy Gibbons. Will you stand up for me? Both live in Charbonneau, and Kathy's a native Oregonian from Hermiston originally. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies. Verification of form. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Girard? Present. Representative Harker? Representative Jefferson Smith? Both present. Excused for business of the House, Representative Buckley and Representative Nathanson. Excused, Representative David Edwards and Representative Roblin. We have a quorum. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed Senate Bill 147. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed House Bills 2162 and 2420.
First reading of memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report filed and distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of H.R. 1 be made special orders of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, March 24th, 2009 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2062 relating to misconduct by school employees and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2063 relating to mandatory reporting of child abuse and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2109 relating to professional technical education. House Bill 2303 relating to Service Member Civil Rights Act and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill and short summary.
House Bill 2269 relating to extradition. Modifies computation of time period within which extradition defendant may be held prior to trial.
Question now arises on third reading. Final passage of House Bill 2269. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Representative Harker. Okay. Cameron votes aye, Harker aye. House Bill 2269, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 86, related to extradition, modifies procedure for determining security requirements necessary to carry out extradition.
The question arises on the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 86. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Beyer, aye. Representative Garrett. Representative Garrett votes aye. Senate Bill 86, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Gilliam, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Speaker Huffman. I ask for temporary return to courtesies.
Representative Gilliam requests unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Any objections? Representative Clem, was that okay? Seeing none, Representative Gilliam, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to introduce two friends of mine and two jewels, treasures for the state of Oregon. I asked them to come over to the side aisle right now. You may have noticed, colleagues, a lot going on down in the Galleria. Our film and video folks are here today, and here are two very special people. On my left, David Smith and his lovely wife, Sam Downey. Dave and Sam have been part of the film and video community in Oregon for some time, and I just wanted you to greet them. David has written and directed more docudramas and films than we can imagine, including special pieces for Mercy Corps and other great groups. And Sam has placed Oregon talent, and then in later life, L.A. talent on shows from L.A. Law to West Wing to Grounded for Life, and I'm really pleased that they're here today. I hope you get a chance to greet them. Welcome.
Welcome to the Capitol. Further courtesies? Clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 96 relating to terminology describing veterans. Revise the definition of veterans and terminology describing veterans.
Question now arises on the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 96. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 96, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 130 relating to dietitians authorizes the Board of Examiners of a licensed dietitian to prorate dietitian license fees.
The question now arises on the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 130. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Gelzer, how do you vote? Gelzer votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger votes aye. Representative Stigler. Stigler votes aye. Representative Springer. Springer's an aye. Senate Bill 130, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in short summary.
Senate Bill 131, relating to name a board regulating naturopathic medicine. Changes the name of Board of Naturopathic Examiners to Oregon Board of Naturopathic Medicine.
Sorry, Obie. The question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 131. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer's yes. Representative Schaffler? Schaffler votes yes. Representative Nolan? Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Kinnemer, how do you vote? Kinnemer is aye. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman votes aye. Senate Bill 131, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 139, related to Oregon State Board of Nursing, deletes requirement for Oregon State Board of Nursing to issue wallet-sized licenses as evidence of current licensure.
Question now arises on the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 139. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Girard, how do you vote? Girard votes aye. Representative Widener. Representative Widener votes aye. Senate Bill 139, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 237, relating to powers of attorney, provides the power of attorney may become effective as specified by future time.
The question now arises on the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 237. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes aye. Senate Bill 237, having received the majority, constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 268, relating to rules of the Chief Justice concerning data that state courts may collect, authorizes Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to make rules relating to data that state courts may require to be submitted by parties and other persons.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 268. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Senate Bill 268, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2173, relating to relief from sex offender reporting.
The question now arises upon third and final passage of House Bill 2173. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, top of the morning to you all on this fine St. Patrick's Day. What House Bill 2173 does today is to narrow the class of offenders eligible for relief from the reporting requirements to only those persons with no more than one conviction. It also allows the possibility of relief to those who have been involved in an episode that involves the same victim and at the time the offenses were committed, and that the defendant did not have any prior convictions. Essentially, what this House bill does is to correct or to clarify legislative intent of a piece of legislation that was passed in 2007 to make it clear what class of offenders are eligible for relief under the sex offender reporting statutes. And it arose because of some, inconsistencies that had occurred in court interpretation over the last couple of years as to the eligibility of multiple offenders to be able to be qualified to apply for sex offender registration relief, as well as to make it very clear that in order to qualify for that relief, you couldn't have a conviction on your record at the time of commission of the sex offense. And so what this does is clarify things for the purpose of agencies such as the Oregon State Police, who collect this data and maintain the sex offender registry, and it brings some clarity to the issue. It's a little more than a technical fix, but I think it is consistent with what the legislature intended last time, and I would urge passage in your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Stigler, do you wish to close? Oh. Pardon me. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Thank you. And I apologize that I did not get this question to you previously. In the explanation of what the bill does, I came away with the impression that we are strengthening the statute in one area, but potentially weakening it in another area. And I'm looking for some clarification before I punch this little
I understand
button
that.
Right here.
And I'll try to clarify. It gets a little bit awkward in there. That was an issue that came up during the public hearing on this. And what we succeeded in doing was trying to clarify what the legislative intent was from the previous session. And what became clear is that what the original language was meant to do was make it very clear to narrow the classification of offenders who could seek relief under the sex offender registration statute and underscore that only that offenders in situations where you have a single victim but multiple offenses, so in other words, an event that could result in multiple counts under an indictment, that very narrow class of offenders could be eligible for relief from the registration statutes if, at the time of the commission of those offenses, they had no prior convictions for sex offenses. So what we did was narrow but also clarify what that narrow class of offenders are that are eligible for relief under the sex offender registration statutes. Does that help?
Further discussion? Seeing no one else, Representative Stigler, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. House Bill 2173, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2449, relating to child abuse.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2449. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2449 comes to you from the House Human Services Committee, and this is the first of a series of bills that I hope that we will see across this floor this session to improve on a bill that we passed last session called Carley's Law. To remind you about this legislation that we worked together to pass last session, Carley's Law bears the name of a child in my community, Carly Sheehan, who was murdered in her home after months of torture by child abuse in Corvallis in June of 2005. In this case, family members, child care providers, and others had consistently called law enforcement and Department of Human Services officials asking for help for this child, but they were unable to access the resources that they needed in order to substantiate an allegation of abuse and remove this child to a safe situation. Carley's Law, which we passed in 2007, sought to address some of those problems. The first thing that it did was that it required that when, during the course of a child abuse investigation, a child is discovered to have suspicious physical injuries, that child be seen by a physician with some expertise in child abuse within 48 hours, or by a person that would then consult with that individual. The bill also required that photographs be taken of the injuries and that those photographs also be shared with designated medical professionals. And it was the belief of those that were involved in Carly's case that had these elements been in effect during the time that her case was being investigated, that her life would have been saved. This bill, as I said, is the first in a series of bills that will help our providers, our physicians, and the Department of Human Services better implement this important bill. This one has the required technical fixes. The first is that, as I mentioned, the Carley's Law requires that when a child is demonstrating a suspicious physical injury, they must go and see a physician so that they can receive treatment. These are things like burns and scalds and broken bones. It's not falling off a bicycle. These are very significant injuries. The problem in the implementation of the bill is that some folks in the field were concerned that because it's called suspicious physical injury, if they were confident that the injury was the result of abuse, that the child did not need to go see a doctor because it was no longer a suspicious injury because we were confident it was due to abuse. This bill clarifies that even if you're confident that these injuries were caused by abuse, the child still needs medical attention and should be taken to see a medical provider within 48 hours. The bill also corrects a challenge. In some cases, that designated medical provider is not available within 48 hours, and so the child is taken to see a local physician or to an emergency room. The law, as it's currently written, does not allow for reimbursement of that hospital emergency room or that physician if the abuse is not substantiated. So this bill will ensure that when an emergency room provides the service, when a local physician steps up to provide the service, they will be paid for their service, they will be reimbursed, regardless of whether or not the abuse itself is substantiated. Finally, the other correction that the bill makes, if you see in Section 2, it removes some language from statute about what must be included in an application to establish a child abuse assessment center or to maintain ongoing funding. Since the assessment center law was first passed, the functions of these organizations have changed. So the language that's currently in statute is now obsolete and requires these organizations to report on things that they no longer do. So instead, they would be working with the child abuse assessment centers, the CAMI teams, to develop by rule what the important applications are, or what the information is that's important to have on that application. And I did just call the Department of Justice and clarified that everyone was on board with this. And I have spoken with the assessment centers, and there's broad support for this bill. Colleagues, I want to thank you for your support of this bill last session. It has already made a measurable difference in the safety of kids. And I wanted to share with you something that came to me from the Klamath County Assessment Center. And there certainly have been challenges in the implementation of the law, particularly in rural areas. But this came from the newsletter of the Klamath County Assessment Center. And it says, since Carly's law implementation, there have been two cases which have remained in the forefront of my mind as an illustration of how this law helps children. The first case was that of a six-year-old female. She was seen under Carly's law due to suspected physical abuse. As part of the physical examination, she had an anogenital examination. That exam found evidence that she had been sexually abused. Without the implementation of Carly's law, the child never would have been seen at CARES, and she would have had ongoing contact with her perpetrator. The second case was that of a two-year-old male. The child was seen for a slap mark to his face under Carly's law. This case would not necessarily have been seen at CARES prior to the implementation of Carly's law either. Due to the thoroughness of the medical examiner, x-rays were ordered and healing fractures were found as a result. And this newsletter goes on to conclude, clearly, the effect of Carly's law has been in the best interest of children, not only in our community, but also statewide. And again, that comes from Klamath County, one of the places where it has been challenging to implement this law. So I hope that you will join me in voting in support of House Bill 2449, which will improve the effectiveness of the law and make it easier for practitioners to implement. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I don't have really strong opinions about this bill, but I did want to at least send a message to the Senate that they might want to do some further inquiry as we move forward on it. And my concern stems from page 2, section 2 of the bill, where it says that each application for funds to establish or maintain a regional assessment center shall include information required by the rules of the Department of Justice and any other information requested by the department. My concern is a simple one, is that it seems like what we're doing here is taking out a large number of the standards, particularly for new CAMI centers, and giving that authority completely to the Department of Justice. I can agree that that maybe they need more flexibility in this, but I just can't quite get there yet that we should completely abdicate that responsibility to the Department of Justice. Another possibility might be to include DHS in the involvement as well. I'm just concerned that this whole process might become a little bit too insular, and I think one of the great things about CAMI centers is they are multidisciplinary teams, and a variety of eyes looking at the abuse acts as a check and balance. I think the same should go in the broader structure. And so while I'm very supportive of CAMI centers, particularly CARES Northwest in my district, I'm going to vote no just to send a message to the Senate that they might want to take a look at this. I'm not encouraging other people to vote no, but I just wanted to explain why you might see me in the no column. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
Yes, please, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. And I appreciate those comments, and I do hope that you will join me in voting yes on this bill. I also wanted to take a moment, because I think that it's important, to again call our attention to the tremendous challenge that we have in this state of meeting the needs of kids who are abused. Last year, the unduplicated count of child victims, these aren't reports, these are substantiated cases of abuse, were 10,716. That's 10,716 Oregon children in 2008 that suffered from abuse and neglect. Carly's case brings to mind the worst case scenario when we have child abuse, which is a child fatality. And unfortunately, this often does not come to our attention until there is a particular story that captures our attention in the media. The fact is that over a dozen children die in the state of Oregon as the result of abuse each and every year. In 2007, it was 12. In 2006, it was 17. In 2005, which is a year we've recently been reading about in the Oregonian, 18 children died in Oregon as the result of abuse. One of those was Carly Sheehan, who this bill is named after. Colleagues, this is an important bill to help strengthen our response, to help us better protect over 10,000 children who suffer the unimaginable. Please join me in voting yes.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Tomei votes aye. House Bill 2449, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2570, relating to membership of Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2570A. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2570 comes to you from the House Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed with a 7-2 vote of its members. The Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors currently consists of 10 members, an OHSU student representative, a non-student member of the State Board of Higher Education, 7 representatives with experience in either OHSU's missions or areas important to the university's success, and the OHSU president. House Bill 2570 reduces the number of non-designated board members to 6 and would require that one board member position represent interest of the university's employees. The OHSU Board of Directors positions are appointed by the governor and they're confirmed by the Senate. Under House Bill 2570, the two largest collective bargaining units at OHSU, AFSCME and ONA, would submit to the governor a list of at least 3 nominees for consideration for appointment to the newly designated board position. This cannot and would not be an employee of OHSU, simply a representative to represent the employees' perspectives. The OHSU University Board of Directors determines policies for the organization, the administration and development of the university. It appoints and employs personnel to carry out the missions of the university. It creates, develops, supervises, controls, and adopts academic programs. You know, colleagues, when I went to the website to try to learn more information, I found that the OHSU board actually on the website indicates its boast of diversity. It actually says that at OHSU, and this is from the President Joe Robertson, at OHSU we value the unique contributions of all employees, patients, students, volunteers, and our local and global communities. It furthers the talk about its competitive edge by saying that because diversity is crucial to our business model, helps us recruit and retain top faculty and employees, it will give us a competitive edge. Now, I want to be clear about something. As I look up in the gallery to my right here, your left, I see OHSU seated with ONA and AFSCME here watching the pending of the floor. They have a great relationship now. They share a very, very great relationship and a mutual interest in moving OHSU forward. After all, they are Oregon's largest employer in the metro area, Metro's largest employer. They are just simply asking for a designated voice that would represent the employees of OHSU to help them make decisions in these difficult times. There are a lot of employees currently being laid off, as you know, and it would be nice for those employees to have representation that they felt was looking out for their interests on the board. Will it change any of those decisions? That's unknown. But to have an active voice at the desk or at the table would certainly mean a huge impact to those employees. After all, they are the largest employer, and the employees are simply asking that they be represented. So again, this will, you know, as I said before, it will reduce that number to six. It will give a voice for those employees on the board, and it's a 10-member board, and I would urge you, I vote. Thank you for your support.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues.
To the bill.
Actually, I have a question of the carrier
question
first.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative. Could the governor today or in the next available vacancy appoint one of these members that represents labor?
He certainly has had that opportunity, yes.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, today, the governor could appoint representatives from anywhere within the existing bill before we even pass this bill. He could appoint a member of labor. So I guess, why doesn't he? The Senate gets to confirm appointments. Colleagues, the board would absolutely, this is a floor letter that I did not get my name on and get out to you from OHSU. The board would absolutely welcome an addition of an individual with labor experience on our board. Quote, we value the role that our employees have at OHSU, just as we value the role of all our constituencies. This bill would limit the ability of future governors, this governor and future governors, and the legislature to look at each board opening on a case-by-case basis and to ascertain what type of expertise is needed at this particular time in the environment we're in based on the mission of this organization and the skill set that would best serve this particular organization and all of our constituencies in the state of Oregon. This bill sets a precedent that could lead to future boards that are confederations of individual constituencies rather than that is singularly focused on the mission of this particular organization. Once we begin a movement towards this constituency-based board, what doors open next? Any number of constituencies could come before this body and argue for representation on their behalf. In the end, you are likely to have a collection of individuals whose major focus is to represent their specific interest rather than the best interest of the organization as a whole. Neither the board nor OHSU management is in any way reluctant to see an employee representative on their board. They testified to that. In fact, they would welcome it. They testified to that. But they do not think that it's easier, that it is either prudent or necessary to mandate that there be this bill. Not only does the governor have the flexibility at any time to nominate an employee representative to this board, but the legislature also has control in its needs to ensure that this person is actually seated. Under existing law, colleagues, under existing law today, the governor only nominates the individuals to serve and can nominate an individual that is outlined in this bill, and it is the legislative body's responsibility to confirm it. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Well, first of all, I'm a union man, and my wonderful dentist, Dr. Sunseri, is an alum from that wonderful institution, OHSU, which I am eternally grateful for having in this state. They're the largest employer in the city of Portland, and it has served my family greatly and will continue to serve the families of Oregon well into, I hope, forever. And initially, I had some conflicts on this, personally. But I in listening to the legal counsel of OHSU, actually, is what swayed me to support the bill in the end. Because the governor can and hasn't, God bless him, for whatever reason, we'll let him explain himself. And OHSU doesn't mind having a labor representative on the board. Therefore, why not put somebody on the board and dedicate a spot? Because what skill set best serves an institution than that skill set that actually does the work at the institution? And if they're going to worry about their constituencies so much and be biased, then I would ask you, is there any history of the existing board members only concentrating on the interest of their constituencies rather than OHSU's constituency? And the answer, I hope, but I don't know, would be no. I understand there's a rather large corporation in Oregon who has several members on the board. I highly doubt that they're concerned about that corporation's interest when they're sitting down operating the whatever it is they do on the board for the best interest of OHSU. I don't think there's a conflict there. And to suggest that there's going to be that a person from labor would naturally be conflicted, but someone from management or corporate level wouldn't, that now you got the labor union member in me rather disappointed, if that's what anyone is suggesting. So I think we're spending a lot of time on this bill that we shouldn't. It's a good bill, should pass. I urge your aye vote.
Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. To address the comments of our good colleague, the representative from Salem, Onsville, and Turner, he's exactly correct. The governor could have made this appointment, and I think we'd be better for it. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. So we've come before House Bill 2570. Now, just picture, if you will, if this room were filled with folks that represented only a few perspectives. There's 60 of us, last I counted. And if we all had similar perspectives, but nobody had the well-rounded scope, we'd have a hard time making some very difficult decisions in this House. So we rely on each other for those perspectives. This board makes very valuable decisions to move this group forward. And they do it without their employees at the table. A representative at the table. Obviously, they can't have an employee. It's in the law. At the risk, I want to be clear, this is not to damage any credibility, but this is just to further my point, that we have an issue here, and it's a critical time, and we continue to hear about impacts that are having, its effect on our people and our citizens and our constituents. And yet a great deal of them that are working without a voice on a board that, quite honestly, and it was a simple Google search, Oregon Live will tell you that there's considerable amounts of money that were given out to top executives at OHSU. Now, I believe in the establishment. I respect what they're doing. And quite honestly, it's no different than a lot of other top executives are doing. But we have a problem with that. And the employees do, too, because in the end, they're the ones that are being laid off. I think it would further the point to have somebody sitting there representing their interests to be able to come back and say, here's why we've done what we did, particularly in these times of difficult times for everybody. So again, yes, the governor can, yes, he could have, and no, he hasn't, nor has he expressed a lot of interest to do so. House Bill, in my opinion, 2570A, as amended, which again, the amendments came as a result of work with ONEA, AFSCME, and OHSU. They were brought to us as amended to address some of those concerns we heard in testimony. I won't sit here and tell you that OHSU is excited about this, although I will agree with the good representative that they have said they would welcome the addition of the board. They just feel they can get there without 2570. I think that's fair to say. Obviously, I wouldn't be carrying this bill forward to this group and asking you for an aye vote if I felt it would occur without it. So again, folks, in closing, I urge you to pass 2570 as amended with an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Wingert, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2570A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2686, relating to child abuse reporting.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2686. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is the simplest, most uncomplicated bill I'm ever likely to represent on the floor. Last session, the legislature passed a statute that allowed pharmacists to be included as health care professionals under Oregon law. And of course, with that, all the ensuing changes to other statutes and rules. One part was missed, and that was most healthcare professionals are included as mandatory reporters of child abuse in Oregon. Pharmacists were not put on that list, and they asked to be added. This bill simply inserts the word pharmacist, one word, into ORS 419B, allowing pharmacists to be mandatory reporters of child abuse. It's that simple. Passed out of committee with a unanimous due pass, and I urge you to vote for this.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thompson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Jefferson Smith votes aye. House Bill 2686, have received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of HCR 4 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, April 9th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 147 related to landscaping.
Bills read for the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 162 relating to disclosure of information about residents of adult foster homes.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 162. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 162 comes to the floor after passing via a unanimous vote on the Senate floor and at the same level of support in our House Committee on Human Services. The bill resolves an existing conflict between adult foster home statute and state and federal laws protecting personal and confidential information. Current statute requires that specific information be maintained and made available to the public. This information includes the licensed provider's name and location of the adult foster home, a summary of the last inspection, and copies of all complaint investigations involving the home, including findings of the report and actions taken by the department. But the identity of the complainant, residents, and witnesses must be protected. However, current statute does not explicitly exclude disclosure of personal or confidential information of residents involved, which is protected by state and federal law. This conflict between the adult foster home statute and the state and federal law has created some difficulty, so Senate Bill 162 expands protection for adult foster home residents by clarifying that specific information must not be accessible to the public. It requires the department to redact any demographic language in documents available to the public, which might disclose a resident's identity or other protected information, including additional privacy protection, by so providing additional privacy protection for the clients. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I did initially...
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I initially did have a concern about this bill because I wanted to ensure that consumers are able to access information about substantiated allegations of abuse. And my concerns have been satisfied. I received a letter from Mary Geer today, who clarifies in her letter that the information about the outcome of abuse will still be reported, and Mary Geer says if we didn't, it would not be helpful to consumers, which is our intent. So she did clarify, and I wanted to put on the record that these reports will still include information about the outcome of an abuse event, so that if there was a serious injury or a death or some type of health impact as a result of the abuse, that would still be available in the publicly available abuse report. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 162, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 165, related to mental health program services.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 165. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 165 directs the Department of Human Services to provide or contract for services for developmentally disabled individuals if services are not provided through the local mental health authority. Oregon counties may provide services to individuals with developmental disabilities either directly or through subcontractors. If counties decline to provide services for individuals with developmental disabilities, Senate Bill 165 allows DHS to assume responsibility for providing the services for a period of time other than the emergency basis currently designated by statute. Additionally, the measure allows DHS to assume direct responsibility or contract with qualified private providers. Senate Bill 165 only addresses developmental disability services, not other services such as public health or mental health services. Lastly, it is important to note that this bill does not change a county's right of first refusal. I urge your support of Senate Bill 165.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, sir.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Greenlich, how do you vote? Greenlich votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. Senate Bill 165, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 288, relating to representation of individual with mental illness committed to custody of Department of Human Services.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 288. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This seems to be Human Services Day. Senate Bill 288 comes to you with the unanimous approval in the Senate and subsequently of the House Human Services Committee. During our committee hearing, we heard no testimony in opposition. So this bill could almost be a consent calendar bill, but I think it's important that we offer just a bit of an explanation of the issue. Patients at the Oregon State Hospital have a right to an administrative hearing if they choose to refuse medication. Disability Rights Oregon, DRO, is a nonprofit organization that provides that legal representation to patients who want to contest the hospital's decision to medicate them. Now, current law allows the Oregon Bar Association's legal aid program to assist in contested cases of child support or public assistance, but that latitude is not presently afforded for Oregon State Hospital patients to be represented by specially trained individuals such as paralegals. Senate Bill 288 will add these individuals to current statute, thereby allowing Disability Rights Oregon to move to more appropriately assign staff by allowing them the option of providing representation with either an attorney or a non-attorney staff member who is specially trained and legally supervised. Simply, Senate Bill 288 will create a third type of hearing in which our nonprofit organizations will be permitted to represent clients with a staff member who is not an attorney. I urge your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Bentz, how do you vote? Bentz votes aye. Senate Bill 288, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 403, relating to wrongful death actions and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 403. Representative Barton.
Colleagues, Senate Bill 403 passes Senate and the House Judiciary Committee without opposition. It essentially removes a small exception in the distribution of punitive damages in a certain in wrongful death actions. It's a good bill. I urge its passage.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 403, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Colleagues, I have a report back for all of us on the tallies from the food drive. You'll recall last week when we last had an update, the Senate had a significant lead on us. I'll read you the final tallies, and some of these are divided out by individual offices. Legislative Council raised a total of $2,210. legislative fiscal raised a total of $4,554, which I believe is the highest per employee amount in the building. Legislative administration raised $4,953. The Senate raised $4,620. And the House raised $6,204. Nice job. If the Senate president or any other of our Senate colleagues try and make it out to be a per-member amount, you can just remind them that it's gauged on per-square footage amount. So we are equal. We win. Further announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will caucus immediately following the session for 10 minutes.
Further announcements. Representative Jefferson Smith. Jefferson Smith, are you in the queue for an announcement?
Pass.
No. The Speaker announces the appointment of a new subcommittee. It's a subcommittee under the Environment Water Committee, a subcommittee on water resources, and appoints to that subcommittee Representative Bob Jensen and Representative Jefferson Smith. Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, yesterday we got the news that Oregon's unemployment rate grew almost another 4% to an incredible 10.8%, the highest since 1983. As my colleague from the upper left coast remonstrated yesterday, Weyerhaeuser just announced a loss of 59 positions in Warrenton. Today it was announced that Weyerhaeuser will close the plant in Dallas, which provides more than 140 family wage jobs in my district. That's a permanent closure. It's not scheduled to reopen. I don't need to belabor these points. You're all aware of how dire the employment situation in our state has become, and it worsens every day. We should be doing everything we can to create jobs. House Bill 3095 would create more than 6,000 jobs immediately in our state. It was introduced as a good faith effort to stimulate the economy through private investment. It is my hope that House Bill 3095 receive a hearing as soon as possible and it quickly be moved through the Sustainability and Economic Development Committee, through the Revenue Committee, and brought here to the floor of the House so we can vote to create jobs for Oregonians. Thank you.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to draw your attention to a real and growing problem in the state. And that problem is drug abuse. There was a great article in Saturday's Oregonian by Maxine Bernstein. You might have seen it. And the drug abuse I'm talking about is drug abuse that's destroying lives. It's drug abuse that puts patients at great risk when they lie to their doctors, pharmacists, and take drugs that are contraindicated. It's drug abuse that is undermining primary care in this state. It's drug abuse that undermines primary care's providers' willingness to see Medicaid patients. That drug abuse, it's not crack, it's not street heroin, though its grip can be every bit as strong. It's prescription drug abuse. And it literally is killing some people and enabling others to stay in their addiction. The article in the Oregonian was quite telling. And colleagues, I would suggest that it's time this legislature joined with all Western states in authorizing a prescription drug monitoring program for drugs with a great potential for the iron grip of addiction. Let's set up some boundaries and sideboards that encourage addicts to get help. Let's pass Senate Bill 355 in its current or amended form. As Catherine Hain, the chairwoman of the Oregon Pain Management Commission, said, "I see the problem with prescription drug abuse getting greater and greater." Thank you, colleagues.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to recognize one of our valued community members in Sandy, Mr. John Brombley. He died February 12th after a bold battle with cancer, and he was 65. He was a very special man because he was a man who would give without even being asked. He had a passion for education, a love that endeared him to people around the world and around the block. John was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and being a Vanderbilt mom, I don't hold that against him, of course. And he joined the Peace Corps and served 2 years in Malaysia and a year in Sarawak as a volunteer science teacher. And 2 years in the Peace Corps, and then he was, 2 years as a Peace Corps recruiter. And he married Peggy, his wife, in 1970 in London, and they embarked on a career of teaching overseas. They were in American Samoa, the Dominican Republic, and Jakarta International School in Lima, Peru. And John was responsible for setting up computer science programs in Indonesia. By 1983, he completed his master's in computer science at the U of O, so that means he was a duck, and came to teach in San Barlo High School. He retired in 2003 after 16 years, but he never stopped being busy. His intelligence, passion, and competence were used as a member of the Oregon Trail School District Board of Directors, and he became chair after a year. John was especially enthusiastic about passing a bond measure to build a new high school in Sandy. And I can tell you that for the community of Sandy, this has been the most uplifting thing that could happen in the community. He was quite active, and he was a man who, as I said, gave before being asked. The school, in recognition of his contribution, has set up a scholarship in his name. And today on the side aisle, I have his widow Peggy and her brother Dale and sister-in-law Becky, who are here from northwestern Iowa, right near Grant County, Wisconsin, where I came from. So I'm happy to have you welcome them here today, and I would leave you with this quote. John believed in the Democratic Party and the democratic process, although he occasionally complained that Democrats were not democratic enough. He also believed in due process, social justice, standing on a principle, and tolerance toward others, up to a point. He understood that our system to work, responsible citizens had to participate and not just be spectators. So he tried to do his part by being actively involved in his community and paying close attention to political issues. John will be dearly missed by all of us that have been involved in the Sanity community and by all who benefited from his tireless community efforts for children. It is my hope that many will be inspired by his legacy.
And on a lighter note, Representative Kettemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate your indulgence. Today is St. Patty's Day, and it's nice to see many of our colleagues joining us in sharing the green. And I asked the Speaker if it might be okay if we sang a little Irish ditty. And I would do a little Irish, and thank you. I put some music on there. I have a little bit of Irish blood. Mostly I'm Heinz 57 variety. Probably the only thing I got from Grandma Kennemer, who was a Riley, was the Irish temper. But if you would join me, let's sing a cappella, a chorus from When Irish Eyes Are Smiling.
When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they steal your heart away.
Thank you all.
Continuing with that theme, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Speaker McHunt. And I think it's very appropriate that this morning you had a substitute speaker, O'Huffman. And I want to thank everyone here. I can see everyone is wearing green today on this most important holiday of the year. And I really appreciate that. Those of us who have some real Irish blood really look forward to this day, and we now pronounce all of you Irish for the day.
Seeing no further remonstrances, adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, April 18th, March 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Wednesday, March 18th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourned.